This call is being recorded. If you do not wish to be recorded, please disconnect at this time.
Hi, everybody. It's Joel Whitaker, editor of Kane's Beverage News Daily and the host of this podcast series. And today we have a very special treat. At least it's a treat for us, and I'm sure it'll be a treat for you, too, because we're going to talk with Steve Krepps. Now, Steve is the founder of Quintessential Wines, which is an importer out in California. But Steve, as it turns out, lives in Missouri, which is interesting in its own right. And secondly, this will be the second time we've interviewed him. The first time was maybe 15 or 20, maybe even 25 years ago. They were pretty much just getting started. And Steve and I both remember this interview because it was done outside. So this one is being done inside. And I'm sitting in my office outside of Washington, D.C., and Steve is out there in about an hour west of St. Louis. And we're glad to have you with us, Steve.
Oh, thank you very much, Joel. Glad to be here.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your son, but especially about yourself. Tell us about where you went to school, where you grew up, and that sort of stuff, just to start off with.
Oh, just short and brief, because, you know, I'm 70 years old, so I could key lock up this phone call all day long. But I was born and raised in the St. Louis area, went to high school, played sports like every other boy back that was born in the late 40s, early 50s, part of the big generation. I enlisted in the Navy back in 1969, did about 4 years for Uncle Sam. Got out of the Navy, went to school. I thought at first I was going to be an air traffic controller because that's what I did when I was in the Navy, but at the end of Vietnam, they let all of us out at about the same time. And, of course, the FAA wasn't ready to absorb 4,000 or 5,000 air traffic controllers, so I had to find another way to make a living. I went to school in the GI Bill.
Where did you go to school?
I went to the University of Missouri.
Okay.
In St. Louis. I was, of course, you can't live on the GI Bill, so I was bartending, going to school, and a gentleman came in one day that made a wine presentation to all the waitstaff, and that started my curiosity right there.
Huh. How fascinating. Do you recall what wine he was presenting to you?
Oh, yeah. He was actually from Palmasan Winery, and the guy's name was Eddie Witherwax. So my memory is still there. Eddie was quite a character and a great personality, and I thought, boy, I could do this. And then he put on a contest for the waitstaff. And I think they could win dinner for two. And I said, you know what, Eddie, why don't you put us bartenders on it just for kicks? And Eddie says, well, you don't have a chance. The wait staff will have it all locked up. I said, you know what, so you're right. So what do you have to lose? So he put us bartenders on. I thought, I can do this. So I took the wines from the wine list. I put them in my cooler. I had the wine list at the bar. People came in. This was a very trendy restaurant back in 1973. And as people would come in, I would suggest wine to them. And I'd say, well, look, you know, whatever you don't finish, you take to your table. I had buckets all around the bar. My entire lounge was full of wine buckets. I sold more wine than all the waiters put together. So I thought, you know what, I can do this.
So that was really clever.
So I applied at a, back in the early 70s, there were a lot of bottlers around the United States. They would buy bulk out of California, and they would make their own blends and make it for their own local marketplaces, you know, four or five states. And in Missouri, there was a winery called Bartenheuer, and I got a job with them in the very beginning as a merchandiser, salesman. Back then, you know, salesmen today, they go out and they make sales calls. Then they have a merchandising team follow them up. Well, we didn't have any. There was probably only four or five wine people in all of St. Louis back then. So we had to go out and write our orders. We had to go back. We had to put up our own displays. We had to do our own wine list. You did everything from the get-go. You had to take care of everything and every detail. And it was a good learning experience to start out that way.
And then do you recall the name of the restaurant?
The restaurant was a restaurant that is no longer in business anymore. It was a chain out of Denver, Colorado called Cork and Cleaver.
I've heard of them.
Yep, it's been a while back.
It's a while back. You're right. We won't discuss how far back, but it's a while back. and then at what point did you decide to get into the wine business on your own?
Well, I started to grow in the business when I started with that first job as a merchandiser, and then I went to a citywide manager job, then a regional job, and I kept growing. Then I was offered a job with Shefflin and Company, mm-hmm. which had a wine company division and a liquor side division. So I went to work in the wine division, and I did well there. Then a company that was in Chicago called Paterno Imports, which is now called Terlato, I went to work for them as a division manager after that. Then I was promoted to national sales manager at the ripe old age of 29, and I just kept growing from there. I decided to go out on my own, which is a scary proposition, by the way, if you hadn't done anything like that in your life before, but it's always something I wanted to do. I did that when I was at 39, and from a lot of recommendations from people who said, Steve, if you're ever going to do it before you turn 40. So I did. And then I'd lay in bed at night and look at the ceiling and say, what the heck did I do?
Well, doing it before you turn 40 or right around 40 is actually a pretty good age to make that sort of move, because you've got enough experience already if you're in a field you're familiar with, and you're not too old, and you're not hanging on waiting for the pension to kick in, if back in the day you had pensions. And, so 40 is a good time to do that, and it also gives you plenty of time to run, and to really develop the business. So you went in around age 39. And how did you start?
Well, I started as a brokerage company because I didn't have a lot of money. So I started in 6 or 8 states, I believe, in the very beginning. I had one employee and my wife as my second employee, who didn't take direction very well but put up with me. I expanded from 8 states to 16 states to 24 states, and it just kept growing. Then I was offered to take on the wine division of Diageo. Was called Palace Brands, and we took on a lot of the Palace Brands products. So then we really started to grow. We did a good job for them. Diageo made a lot of internal changes and focused more and more on their spirits, and were eliminating wine brands. So I tied up at that time with the Baroness Philippine de Rothschild and created a company called Caravel, in which there was 4 of us as partners. And that went well for a few years, but I'm really more of an independent cuss, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to do something on my own or with my own sons, and so I sold my shares in Caravel to the Baroness and started Quintessential back in 2002.
And so it's been about 18 years that you've been doing this. So I was right. It was about 15 years ago probably that we had that interview.
Yeah. Right about that time.
Yeah. And who was your first brand that you imported?
The first imported brand was, we had two. One was Valentin Bianchi from Argentina, and about simultaneously at the same time we took on Siemens Sig from South Africa. So there was my son and I, our first, second, third, fourth national sales meeting were the two of us sitting across the table. He went west and I went east. And with all the national experience I had, of course, it helped me open a lot of doors to a lot of distributing companies who had become long-term friends, and now lifelong friends. So,
yeah. And how did your son do? Because he did not have that same experience that you had.
Well, he had actually he didn't have a lot of the national experience, but he had one day, the poor guy called home from college, and looking for his mom. So he was looking for a little money, spending money at college. But he got me on the phone instead. I said, Dennis, here's the deal. You're off pretty much on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Ride with the salesman in the city that you work with. Sell wine with those guys. I'll give you a little T&E to take care of your expenses, and I'll pay you to do it. I'll give you a commissionable salary. He goes, Dad. He says, okay, I'll do it. So he did it. He graduates from college, and I said, well, what are you going to do now? He says, well, I'm going to be in the wine business. I said, well, good. I said, do you want me to make some phone calls? No, Dad, I want to be my own person. I have to make my own place in my life. So he goes up to Kansas City, Missouri, where he thinks I don't know anybody. And, of course, the distributors there call me and they say, hey, your son's up here looking for a job in the wine business. Can we hire him? I said, well, if you think he's qualified, you should put him on. And they did, and then, of course, he did really well. He went from distributor network to co-brand and then over to me.
And about how long does that take?
Let's see. I think he was in Kansas City 3 or 4 years. He was in co-brand for a couple of years, and then he came with me.
Okay. That's the sort of time frame that they often recommend for somebody for a second generation coming into what is effectively a family business to work for somebody else so they know they can do it. It's not just the family type deal, and that's
right.
That's great.
And it also gives them a little bit different perspective on how other people do things.
Yeah. And so how did you all split up the responsibilities when he came with you?
Back then, he came with me back when I still had the brokerage company. We were just about to merge into Caravel. We were a few years from merging into Caravel. So we had about 18 or 20 states when he first came with me. And he mostly, at that time, took over Illinois and the city of Chicago. And we also put a sales crew under him in the city of Chicago, and he did very, very well.
Good. Good. And so how long was it before he became identified as a co-owner, which is the way I believe your PR person, Lorraine Ragasio, always identifies you two as co-owners?
Well, when we started Quintessential Wines up, and he said to me, Dad, can I be a partner? I said, sure. So I said, you're going to have to work really hard. You're going to have to share in the heartache. You're going to have to share in the entrepreneurial spirit, which is an extreme sense of urgency. And you're going to have to understand that and live by it. And he goes, I'm in. So I just made him 50% owner right from the get-go.
Terrific. Terrific. Now tell us a little bit about this deal with Accolade. How did that come about, and what can you tell us about that?
Well, mostly that was done by Dennis. Accolade was looking to make this sort of a change in their way they marketed their brands in the United States. They actually had recommendations from our distributor network that they should take a very serious look at us. They called Dennis about a year ago, and at first we kind of stood off. We didn't go after the brands. The more we thought about it, the more it made sense, the more it made a good mix for us. They have brands in places where we were void. And so about 6-8 months ago, we got back together with them. We worked through a lot of details. And it's finally come to fruition.
Well, that's terrific. And you announced that, of course, this past, what was it, Tuesday, I believe, that you announced
right.
that the deal had been put together and you were going to be representing them starting in... June 1, I believe it is.
Right.
So that's really good. So so Dennis put that deal together, so I'll have to call him up and we'll have to do an interview with Dennis then also. Talk to us about the challenges of working together.
Well,
or do you work together because your company is based in the San Francisco Bay Area, you're in Missouri. What's going on here?
Well, remember, there's technology nowadays.
True.
And we talk on an average of 4 to 6 times a day. He's telling me what he's got going on. I'm telling him what I'm seeing, maybe things that we should look for. I'm working more with PR. He's becoming more and more the face of the company. I had been for many, many years. And I keep stepping back, and I've been doing it for a long time. That's probably one of the hardest things for me to do, is to get back out of the way of the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
But he has shown that he's not just good at it, he has a natural talent for it.
Mm-hmm.
So he's done a fantastic job.
Well, that's terrific. And, this is going really fast. I'm surprised. I thought it would take us a lot longer than it appears to be taking. So tell us a little bit about... how did you find out when you got the Accolade deal tied up?
Well, we had been going back and forth on, you know, it's funny. Here we are, Americans speaking English, and here are all the Australians thinking they speak English. But you'd be surprised the differences when you come down to working out contracts. And I know you have a legal background, so you understand that. And that's why this, you gave through that giggle in there. But it was, you know, just technicalities and it, taking our time. And we knew it was coming. We both wanted it to happen. And it was just getting the verbiage correctly that we could both understand and agree to. So we knew we'd been working on it. We'd been working towards the same goal, and it finally did work out. But, you know, there's one thing, Joe, that you didn't ask me, that I didn't offer to tell you. But since you and I first talked 15, 18 years ago, whatever it was, my youngest son has also come in and joined us.
And in terrific.
And in California, well, he came in as a street salesman, and we put him at the bottom, gave him a duster in his hand so he could go out and work and learn the basics. But now he's developed really well, and he's the sales manager. We also run our own distributing company in California. And Steve Jr., the youngest of my two boys, runs the wholesale company in California.
Mm-hmm. So when did you decide to get into the wholesale business? That's interesting in its own right.
Well, it just seemed like some of the opportunities had narrowed a bit in California, and it just seemed like the right time, the right place, the right opportunity. The cards just fell into place or we wouldn't have done it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's worked out very, very well.
Good, good. Do you ever feel threatened by the fact that your wholesale company is a relatively small fish in a pond with a couple of really big guys?
Well, the really big guys, remember, they call on 100% of the people in California that have a liquor license.
Mm-hmm.
With the wines that we sell, we don't have to call on 100% of the people who have a liquor license. There's stores that will never, you never say never, but potentially would have difficulty selling the kind of products that we import. Many of them are spirit-only accounts. Many of them are 98% beer accounts. You know, those kind of accounts we don't need that huge of a sales force for.
Mm-hmm.
We cover with California with about 20 salespeople in the better wine accounts. We also cover the chains. We have chain managers that cover the chains. And it works out really well.
Interesting, because I've always worried a little bit about the smaller wholesaler, you know, as the wholesale business transformed over the last 25 years or so. And so it's interesting to hear that perspective. It really is. So he takes care of the. I can see how this is evolving. Your youngest son, Steve Jr., takes care of the wholesale business. Your oldest son, Dennis, takes care of the import business. And you eventually will just sit back on your lily pad and watch and comment.
And have lunch with Joel Whittaker.
Well, that sounds like fun.
Yeah.
I'll take you up on that next time I get out to Missouri, which hopefully won't be that far away.
Well, I'll probably
knows.
Get in D.C. before you get to Missouri, so we'll take it up there.
Well, that's fine. If it's open, I'll have you at the National Press Club. If you've never been there, it's a place worth going to. And if you have been there, well, you know, we can go somewhere
there.
Else if you want. So
sounds fun.
Yeah, it does. So tell us a little bit about, first of all, are there any questions that you wish I'd asked that I didn't so far? Because we're actually wrapping this up, I think.
No, I think... Of course, after I get off the phone, I'll think of something, but I think you've nailed it pretty good, Joel.
All right. So tell me, what do you think is the single biggest positive lesson you've learned as you built your company Quintessential from the ground up?
Holy cow. You know, I think it goes back to I remember years ago we had a lady evaluate our company, and she said, well, I said, well, what are the negatives? She said, you're doing this right. I said, that's good, but what are the negatives? She says, I've evaluated a lot of wine businesses, and she says, you guys are almost too honest. I said, too honest? I said, I don't know if that's a bad thing. She says, you notify your distributors, you take care of their credits, you go over and above what most companies do. I think that's been a big plus for us is we've been honest with our distributors, the retailers that we deal with, our sales staffs, our people inside, and I think that has given us a good touch of integrity. And that integrity flows over when you go to a distributor and you want to talk to them about something new. They learn to. We've built trust with the distributor network and the trade.
So you really think that's a really key element of success in business. And I ask that question because, as you may know, business schools have discovered ethics in recent years. Long since you and I went to business school, I'll tell you. But they've discovered ethics, and it's interesting to hear you say that because that fits so well into the lessons they're trying to teach their students, or at least we hope they're trying to teach their students.
Well, it's worked for us, and I hope the next generation carries it forward.
Excellent. Now, next question is the obverse of that, which is, what do you think is the single biggest mistake you guys have made in the process of going from your little teeny brokerage business up to a respectable importer at this point with a wholesale arm attached?
With the biggest mistake? Sometimes, that's a very tough question, Joel. Not having the ability to foresee the pandemic, not having the ability to foresee 2008 recession. From a financial standpoint, I've always been extremely conservative. We've never borrowed money. We've always worked on our own cash flow. I think that's a positive and not a negative. Another person would say, well, you know, if you borrowed money, you could maybe expand greater and faster.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I kind of like to play it safe. So I guess that could be my negative, is I don't take a huge financial risk at any time.
Yeah, I'm not so sure I'd call that a negative, though. I think that's another positive lesson you learned. So, you know, it's also that Midwestern heritage of yours coming out there, because the guys in the Midwest, it seems to me, are much less inclined to take big risk than the people on the coast who...
Yep.
Somehow or other begin to think they've learned how to manage the world, and then, you know, along comes the 2008 recession or the virus or something else, and they have to learn all over again. If I can ask you, and you can feel free to say no, how much cash do you keep in the bank for the business? And I'm not asking dollar amount, I'm asking in terms of monthly expenses, you know. If the world turns to crap, how long can you ride without having to really sweat?
Well, you know, I always feel that the company business and my bank account are kind of one and the same.
Well, they are.
You know, we could easily go another year.
Okay.
You know, I think.
Yeah.
That would put me really having lunch with you on a more consistent basis.
Well, okay, so either I'd be moving to Missouri or you'd be moving here. It'd be better for you if I was out in Missouri.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, Steve, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us and telling us a little bit about how this deal came together. We'll follow up with Dennis, and if you'll let him know that,
sure.
I'd be grateful. It's great talking to you once again and having the opportunity to catch up on all the progress that the company has made over the years. Aside from you being able to step back even further, where do you see Quintessential going in the next 2, 3, 4 years?
Well, you know, we've expanded from that first conversation that I had with you. I think we were maybe 15,000 cases, begging for 20,000 cases at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're well over 1 million cases, 1.2 million, 1.3 million. I would like to see it get to 2 million in the not too far foreseeable future. And I'd also like to expand into high-quality spirits at some point. But we're researching that, and we're seeing what the possibilities are.
Oh, very good. And how about people? Are you looking to hire any additional people at this point? I would assume so, with the Accolade deal having come together.
Definitely. I mean, we got hit a little bit by the virus and got surprised.
Mm-hmm.
So we furloughed a few, but we immediately brought everybody back on.
Good.
And we are going to be looking at bringing on more people. And if we do get into the spirit side, which would mean a complete unique spirit division, we would be looking for people in that arena also.
Great. So if somebody wants to get a hold of you, how do they do that?
I can give you my cell phone number.
Okay.
Okay.
Just keep in mind, this is going to be out there on the Internet, so, you know, I think you'll be safe, but one never knows.
Okay, let's do the email.
Okay.
My name is Steve at Quintessential Wines. That's plural with the wines.com.
Excellent. And Quintessential is spelled Quintessential?
Yes.
Excellent. How did you pick that name, by the way?
I think it was over a couple of bottles of wine in a restaurant one night.
And we thought, works.
You know, that's a pretty unique name. It's a little bit hard for a email address, but once we get it on our mail it'll be automatic. And mm-hmm. we just thought it was unique, and it kind of fits.
Okay, good. Well, Steve Krebs, it's been a joy talking to you once again. Congratulations on the accolade deal. That's a real triumph. I know you know that already, and I'm sure you all had a couple of bottles of wine to celebrate when you finally tied it up, but that's a real plus for you, and it's such a delight to see a company grow from 15 or 20,000 cases up to, roughly a million or so today. So that's a great, great story, and we appreciate your time a lot.
Thank you, Joel. Let's not go 18 years again, huh?
I think that makes good sense. We'll have to check in. Maybe I think we'll try to do it every 5 years or so at the most. Don't want to make it too often because then it ceases to be something new, but on the other hand, don't want to let it go another 18 years. So that's excellent. Excellent, Steve. So thank you so much, and everybody, thank you for listening. It's a delight to have you with us today, and we will look forward to our next podcast at some point in the not-too-distant future. Bye-bye now.
This call has been recorded.